I'm Tiziana Deering. You're listening to Radio Boston. About 600. That is how many families are on the state's emergency shelter waitlist as of this week. In Melrose, volunteers have stepped up to provide support to migrant families who are a part of that group, and they received some harsh online criticism after a recent community meeting about it. So we wanted to look at the services they're providing and why they're doing it. Paul Belfonte is president of the Immigrant Support Alliance and joins us live in Studio 2. Paul, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So why are you doing this, Paul?
Well, because there's a need and because there's people who care. I think my wife and I moved to Massachusetts in Melrose about 7 years ago, right before the 2016 election and everything that happened after that. We just felt like we needed to get involved in something. We just felt like we needed to do something. And we had recently started going to a Unitarian church in town, and through that, there was kind of a social justice effort that led us into this kind of work, combining with other volunteers in the area.
And tell us what the Immigrant Support Alliance does.
So we are a very small, very grassroots, all-volunteer organization. So we work with resettlement agencies to support either refugees or asylum seekers to get on their feet. You know, they come to this country usually with very little assistance, sometimes a little bit, but often not. And, you know, they don't always know English. They need to learn the transportation system. They need to learn financial literacy in some cases, obviously. They need to get a job. And learning English leading to the job, transportation, healthcare needs, advocacy if there's kids involved, somebody to help navigate the school systems, all those kind of things are involved in leading them towards independence. That's always the goal, is that financial and otherwise independence. We support them often for about a year on a sliding scale of dependency and support. But we always stay in contact. All our clients, you know, we still have relationships with, we still stay in contact with. We've developed really strong relationships with them over the years.
So this is neighbor to neighbor support. This is person to person, neighbor to neighbor. We would call this mutual aid, right? In the olden days.
You know, the cliche, it takes a village, and that's what usually comes together. You know, there may be one family that will provide the housing on a rotating basis, but then they're not the ones who have to take care of everything else, right? There's somebody who's going to coordinate transportation. There's somebody that's going to take them to a food bank for food, working on tutoring for English, working on developing a resume, et cetera, et cetera. There's all these things, but there's different people throughout the community. There's a core group of people that do kind of the governance and the planning. But then there's a whole network throughout our communities, and it's not just Melrose, Malden, Winchester, Wakefield, all the area. There's members that you know contribute to all that throughout.
We're speaking with Paul Belfonte, who's the president of the Immigrant Support Alliance. Neighbor to neighbor support of families and people who are coming in as refugees, as asylum seekers. I'm going to play a couple of different pieces of sound here. So first, we spoke with Miriam Nakai, who's an immigrant from Uganda who now lives in Templeton. She and her four children were paired with volunteer hosts through the Refugee Immigrant Ministry in Malden until her work visa was finalized. She was able to start working as a nurse assistant. Here is what she said about her experience in having this kind of mutual aid support.
Yeah, I'm really grateful for those people, because without them, I don't see myself here in America. I wouldn't see myself here at any point, because it was really hard. I mean, even if they were hosting me, still it was really hard.
And I also want to play Linda Alexander of Winchester. She's a retired English teacher. She works with the Immigrant Support Alliance to help immigrants and asylum seekers with her husband, Bruce, and served as a volunteer host in the past for another woman from Uganda like Miriam. And here's what Linda told our producer, Kyrie.
You learn so much just by talking with them and listening to them. And I really came to appreciate the incredible work ethic that she has and her deep religion and her take on things in the United States. that really has been meaningful, I think, for us.
So, Paul, there are so many things I want to unpack. And, you know, in the time that we have, there's like 10 different directions we can go. But the place that I want to start is the mutuality that we hear in that, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that both people are transformed by spending this time together. And you're nodding vigorously, so I'm going to stop talking so you can start talking in response to that.
Well, I mean, if you just sort of think about the situation, right, these are people that are often fleeing for their lives, literally. They've gone up against an oppressive political regime. It could be a human trafficking situation, got on the wrong side of a gang, you know, all those kind of scenarios where they literally had to escape for their lives. And so they come here and there's such a drive, there's such integrity and character, and that you just know that they're going to succeed. And there's plenty of setbacks, right? They go through all sorts of things when they get here. And sometimes it's just, you know, trying to figure out the transportation system and things like that. But
oh, man,
you know,
everybody's trying to figure out the transportation system.
Exactly. You know, and housing and all these things and trying to figure all this out. But they keep persevering. They keep working hard and, you know, and they will take the jobs that others won't take. There's always this myth that they're taking jobs away from Americans, quote unquote. There's 200,000 open jobs in Massachusetts alone. And a lot of those jobs don't pay great. They may be, you know, 3 p.m. to 11 a.m. or overnight shifts. It's the immigrants that will take those jobs.
So I'm going to play a little more sound from Miriam Nakai, the immigrant from Uganda who now lives in Templeton, is working and talks about some of the negativity that's behind what you're talking about, that immigrants sometimes face here in the state.
This country has grown over the hundreds of years by immigrants.
We work so hard, but it really hurts when you hear people talking bad about immigrants. We don't deserve to be here yet. We leave our children in homes, we leave our kids everywhere, and we go out there to work for the people who don't want us in these countries. It's really sad that we don't get appreciated.
And let's go ahead and play that other cut that started to play there, that which was Bruce Alexander. Now, that's Linda's husband, so they're volunteers with the Immigrant Support Alliance, sort of following on to what we were just hearing.
This country has grown over the hundreds of years by immigrants again and again and again. That's the real story there. And so for people who are concerned about it, I guess all I can say is meet immigrants when you can and learn more about them.
So, you know, you talked about the organizations, the agencies that you work with, that the, that the Immigrant Support Alliance volunteers partner with. And what's underlying that, Paul Belfonte, is the fact that they are working with people who are here legally.
Yes, absolutely. And it's really important that we work through those kind of resettlement agencies because, again, we don't have the resources just as volunteers to onboard them in the beginning, to make sure they've gone through their, you know, their health reviews and that they have a legal status. If we take on an asylum seeker, for example, we want to make sure they've already found a lawyer and have filed their asylum claim because that means they've got a pretty good case, right, if the lawyer is going to represent them. Although that's one of the, you know, one of the terrible aspects of the way our whole system works is that, you know, some of our clients have been here for years and years and they still haven't had their hearing. You know, they could be building a life, they could be buying a home, and then potentially they could hear, sorry, you can't stay.
So I want to ask you then, Paul, how have you changed? How have you grown? You came into this wanting to engage in social justice work. Mm-hmm. How have you changed being a part of a community of volunteers, supporting people who are working hard to be here?
Well, first of all, I would say that, you know, across the group of volunteers that does this work, we have developed some real deep friendships by doing this kind of work together. And then obviously with the clients themselves, you just gain such an appreciation, such respect for what they're able to go through. I mean, and they're trying to acclimate to a new country, a new culture, while they're dealing with often unspoken trauma from what they've been through. I mean, if you add all those layers together, the obstacles that they've got to overcome and the character that they show and the resilience, as I've said before, and that perseverance and that drive, I mean, you just know that they're going to succeed because they refuse not to.
Have things changed since the emergency shelter system was declared full by Governor Maura Healey in November? And, you know, at the beginning of this week, we had almost 600 families on the wait list. That number is going to continue to grow. Have you seen, and if the answer is no, that's fine, but have you seen any changes?
The only thing that I've seen are some of the efforts that have happened recently, like what they did in Reading at the National Guard shelter, where they had a whole, I think, a two-week period where they had a number of migrants go through the whole process of applying for work permits.
The work authorization
clinic. And making sure that the paperwork that needed to be filed was filed and filed correctly. And I read recently that several of those people, a large number, actually got their work authorization in a relatively short amount of time. And that means that they can go out and start getting jobs. They can get out of the shelters. They can start paying rent on their own, which is what they desperately want. And so I would say that that's a hopeful sign. It's a relatively small impact, but a big impact if it can be scaled out, if it can be continued. And I know there's other parts of the country that are looking at what we did here and really trying to model after it. So there are some hopeful signs, but, you know, there's a huge need.
So what originally caught us, our attention, was an article that talked about some pushback that made you sad after a public information session. What I want to focus on is, what do you want people to know and understand, you know, in clear terms right now? Tell us.
Well, I think one thing I want to make sure people understand is that, like I said, we're a very small grassroots group. There's a lot of us around. There's groups in Arlington and Cambridge and Lexington all over that work in similar ways to what we do. And they all just need, you know, if people are interested, you don't have to make a huge commitment to get involved. Like I said, when, for example, Miriam, she studied and went to get her GED.
Miriam Nakai from Uganda.
Yes. So she studied at Bunker Hill Community College, and then she had to take the tests up at Salem State, I believe. And so we had this whole network of people that would drive her to take, because there were three or four different times that she had to take the GED test. Somebody would drive her, another person would pick her up. And there were a lot of people that coordinated around that. But those people only had to make that one drive, right? They didn't have to commit hours and hours to it. So as long as people want to sort of dip their toe in the water and get more and more involved, if they are driven to, that's great. But you can do small things and really help us a lot. Obviously, housing is a huge need. What we usually ask for in a host home is a 3-month commitment. It often, because relationships develop, it can turn to 6 months or 9 months. But we need to be able to have people sort of lined up, because, like I said, it's usually about a year that we end up supporting our clients before they're fully independent.
And if people want to volunteer, how can they get in touch?
Well, we are building a website, but we do have a page. It's a little bit of a mouthful, immigrantsupportalliance.org. There's a contact us link. There's a email info@immigrantsupportalliance.org. And we're happy to, you know, take in any, obviously there's a donation button on the page as well. And anybody who's interested and wants to get involved in any way, we're happy to have that conversation.
And don't worry, we'll have more information on our website, which is a little easier, radioboston.org. Paul Belfonte, president of the Immigrant Support Alliance, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.